You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Dancin' Man, a Fabulous Invalid podcast featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes interviews with the cast and creative team of Bob Fosse's Dancin' on Broadway. I'm Rob Russo.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
And we're your hosts.
Dancin' sadly closed on Broadway on May 14th, but we remain so proud to have been co-producers on the show. And we still had a few cast members to talk with, and so we headed back to the Roosevelt Cocktail Room at Civilian one last time for a few final conversations.
Yes, and joining us for this episode is cast member Colton Krause. I feel like Colton needs no introduction, but they performed in the original revival Company of Cats on Broadway while simultaneously studying dance at Juilliard. They also appeared in the film adaptation of Cats on the FX series Fosse Verdon. And Colton was named one of Dance Magazine's top 25 to watch in 2018 and is the only person to win all four national titles at the New York City Dance Alliance, which we will talk to them about because it's something that I didn't really know anything about, but Colton shared some information on.
They are incredibly, incredibly talented.
Oh my gosh. Colton. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the highlights of seeing Dancin' at the Music Box Theater for the brief and shining moment that it was on Broadway was seeing Colton Krause on stage.
I agree with
that. And that's kind of universal. I feel like everybody agrees with
that. Yeah, everyone.
All right, let's get to the conversation.
Colton, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're delighted. We've been looking forward to
yes.
this one.
Excited.
If I can be so bold as to say, we are talking to you as you are heading into your final weekend of dancing.
Yes.
So it's been a journey, clearly. Mm-hmm. One that's been, what, roughly 2 years of your life?
Yeah.
From start to finish, so to speak?
Yeah, exactly. So, and two different locations, yeah, you know, San Diego and New York.
How was that going out of town?
You know, it was fun. We bonded as a cast a lot because we were all like stuck in this one place, the Shiley, all together. And we were like, we didn't love the Shiley, but you know, we bonded over it.
Was it like a fraternity sorority kind of experience?
Yeah, it was like summer camp. We were at like summer theater camp all together, just like boop, going to, you know, the old Globe and then going to the beach all together. It was really fun, but.
I mean, San Diego is not a terrible place to have to be for a month or two.
Yeah, it's not horrible. And I had my car, so I was good, at least.
Wow, that's nice. Do you have a car here?
No, I don't. It was when I lived in Arizona during the pandemic. So I bought a car and then I sold it when I moved back here.
Good. Hard to keep a car in New York City, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling today? What's going on through your mind as you head into this last weekend of performances?
Good. I'm trying to keep it clear because like I don't want my emotions to get, you know, too out there because, you know, it's kind of hard to sing and cry at the same time.
Yeah.
And
you still have to do the thing.
Exactly. Right? And if I come out doing Spring Chicken crying, that's going to be a weird moment.
It's a different chicken.
It's a different chicken. Yeah.
I mean, I would not be opposed to seeing that, but I understand why you don't want to show the world that.
We get it.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. So taking a step back, you just mentioned you were in Arizona for the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You're from Arizona originally, right?
Yes.
When did you start dancing? What was your first, you know, introduction to dance?
So I think I started dancing around like 7 or 8 age. And it was because of my sister. Growing up, I wanted to do everything she did. And so when she did soccer, I did soccer.
I can do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was that. And then she did dance and I was like, cool, I'll try it. And then after that, I was like, I'm done trying what she's doing. I'm just going to do this. But we both danced together until she graduated and she opened up her own salon.
Was there a particular type of dance that you sort of got into, or was it all of it? Was it, you know, ballet, tap, dance, jazz, you know, all of it?
Yeah. So first I started with hip hop because that's just what I started with. Yeah. And then my studio owner came into class one day and she grabbed me and she was like, you're going to be doing ballet, jazz, tap, hip hop, acro. You're going to do it all. And I was like, okay. And then that kind of started it. So Wanda Manville was really the one who started my career.
And at what point did you think that this is a career, that this is something I could do, you know, as a job?
I think it was when I was competing at New York City Dance Alliance because during their nationals, they had a lot of real world opportunities, if you will. And so there was a lot of auditions that were happening, and it was, I don't know if I was 9 or 10. I think I was around that age. And I auditioned for, they had Billy Elliot coming because Billy Elliot was on Broadway.
Yeah.
And I auditioned for that and they were looking for a new Billy because they aged out a lot. And so I made it to the final callback of that. And I think that was when I was like, oh, this is a career. And like, weird. But then I was too tall. So...
Isn't that this business, huh? You're too tall, you're too short, you're too this, you're too that.
All exactly. The aged out Annies, Billies, and Olivers out
exactly.
there.
They should form their own union.
Yeah. They should, really. Yeah,
right. So to have.
Oh, true. Well, you just mentioned the New York City Dance Alliance. And I, to be honest, I don't know what it is. So could you share a little bit about what the New York City Dance Alliance is and how it featured in your training and your career?
Yeah, so it's founded by Joe Lanteri, and it's just... It's this dance competition and convention. They focus mainly on the convention aspect of it. And it's not a lot of competition. I find that like a lot of other competitions is more about like, who's going to win, who's going to do that. But when you go there and compete as an outstanding dancer or whatever, you create this like family with everyone there. Mm. And you kind of, Joe creates this atmosphere of like, everyone supporting everyone. Like, sure, there's obviously a winner, but like, it's not about the prize. It's about what you gain from this experience. Mm. I found it more about getting in these different classes, switching different genres of dance every hour and like trying to adapt that. And so it was great in teaching me how to step into an audition room after the fact. But yeah, so it's basically just this big convention and competition that travels around the world. I think they go to 26 cities around the world, and then they have their nationals in New York, and then they just do as many like real world opportunities. The Rockettes usually come and do an audition for like the little girls to play Clara and also the Rockettes, and then Andy Blankenbuehler usually comes. That's how I met him when I was younger. Josh Burgos is always there. It's really great. He has a really great tight-knit community that's also in the professional world. So it's really cool learning from all of them.
Yeah. And it sounds like community is the key word, right? That it's about building this, you know, community of dancers from all different walks of life, all different styles. And it sounds like it's also like an ongoing thing, right? It's just, is it all year round in all the different places that it travels to?
Yeah. So they start in the end of October and then it goes through, actually this weekend is their last regional city. Mm-hmm. And then summer is the end of June through the beginning of July, I think, or something like that for their nationals. But yeah, so basic kind of, there's a couple months where they're off, but mainly it is. Yeah, yeah.
You've just answered so many questions that I've had. Thank you. Because, of course, I did no research. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you.
Why would we do research? Right,
yeah.
Well, we did a little bit of research because we know you went to Juilliard.
Yes, I did.
So I'm curious, speaking of auditions, what was that audition like for Juilliard?
Oh, my gosh. It was kind of stressful, kind of not at the same time, because at that point I wasn't sure if I wanted to, like, a week before I was like, I'm not going to go to this audition. I don't want to go to school. And then 5 days before, my mom was like, we have the flight where you're just going. And if you don't get in, you don't get in. Cool. And it's basically like, you do a ballet class, they make a cut. You do a modern class, they make a cut. You do a rep class, they make a cut. You do your solo that you've prepared for them or whatever, they make a cut. And then you do an interview. And like, they cut pretty drastically, to be honest. Yeah. Not as bad as they used to. I heard horror stories from some of the older people I know who auditioned before me, and they were like, yeah, they started walking around at pliés, which is the first thing you do at bar, and we're tapping people and like, thank you so much for coming, and like, you're cut. They didn't do that. They cut after every round, but it was they cut very drastically. Like, in our rep round, we had, it started out with like, there's like 200 maybe, or 150 of us, something like that. And they cut it down, like, by the rep round, which was the third round, there was only 7 of us.
Oh, that is harsh.
Yeah.
7?
Uh-huh. And then I think they kept everyone from that round to do their solos just because they were like, let's just see it. Yeah. And then after that, they interviewed 3 people.
Oh, my gosh.
You being one of them.
Yes.
What's going through your mind when you're 1 of 7 or 1 of 3?
I try not to think about it because I'm just like, you could get cut any moment. Right. So, you know.
So you just have to do you.
Exactly. I'm just going to be here and listen and Yeah. Do whatever they ask.
And that's good advice, I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't stress about it.
I'm getting the sense that you were sort of unfazed by that whole audition process. Or was it challenging and stressful?
At the beginning, I was nervous. And so, like, I didn't eat a lot. And then, like, halfway through, I was like, I really should have ate because it was, like, a full day event. Yeah. It was, like, from 10 until, like, 5. And I was like, I'm so hungry. But, yeah, I think that was just, like, the nerves at the beginning of it. But then once I got in the room, I was like, okay, like, this is easy. It's a ballet class. It's a modern class.
You know this.
Yeah, I'm like, I've taken all this. And like I was saying, NYCDA trained me for it, basically. Right. So I'm like, I know how to do this.
Well, I get it's funny because, you know, it's all in how you look at things, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's the frame of reference that you bring. Because in a way, aren't we all always auditioning?
Exactly.
You know?
Every day we step out the door.
Right? You know, I mean, isn't that life in this business, right? But if you don't think of it that way, then and you just do you. You know, then rewards will come. Right?
Exactly.
So shortly after starting at Juilliard, I believe you were cast in Cats, right?
Yes.
So how did that come about? I guess it was it through Andy Blankenbuehler? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. Because I grew up with him, knowing him and assisting him and stuff in these competition settings. I emailed him and I was like, hey, like, I'd love to see, because I'd never been technically to like a real Broadway audition, so I didn't really know what it was like, because I just did the NYCDA ones, which is kind of different, and then they call you in, and like, we did like an NYCDA thing for Newsies, but it was only people from an NYCDA, so we just tapped and then sang a song. So I emailed him and I was like, hey, I'd love to just see what a real audition is like. I'm at school here, can I come in? Because also Cats was like one of the first musicals I've ever saw, like the DVD, and I would run around the house pretending I was Victoria. And so I was like, well,
good choice.
Yeah, exactly. It was a great choice. Yeah. Yeah. So I just emailed him and then he was like, yeah, absolutely. And he was like, well, I need to know, like, if you got offered a role, would you take it? Because basically he was like, don't waste your time coming in if like that. And I'm like, okay. And I thought about it and I was like, yeah, I take it. It's Cats. I want to be in that. Went to that audition. I missed like 3 days of school because it was like 3 weeks of auditions. There was auditioned every single dancer in New York City. It was like wild, much like the process for dancing. Like there were over 1,000 people or whatever. Got the call that I booked it because I didn't have an agent at that time. And so they just called me directly and I was like, okay. And I called Joe and Leah Brandon, who at the time was... she was also part of NYCDA. She was like the, what is it called? Like the director. And so I called her. I was like, so I'm trying to do both school and the show. I don't know if that's possible. And she was like, it's going to be the hardest thing you'll ever do. And then Joe was like, you have to present Larry with what you are going to miss. So have a full schedule out. You'll miss this. You'll miss this. You'll miss this, but you won't miss this. And I talked to Andy before I went in and I was like, hey, can I not understudy anything? Because I can't go to those rehearsals because I'll be in school. He was like, great. Did all that. And I was like, I only missed 30 minutes of one class.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. And so I planned it all out and I presented it to him and he was like, yeah, go for it. Because they have this thing where they want to like break a dancer down to build you up because that's how you become a true artist. And they couldn't break me down. And so they're like, maybe when you're really tired and exhausted, you'll break down and then you'll build into a real artist. So he was like, go for it. And so that was how I got to do it.
They never broke you down, did they?
No.
Yeah. I get the sense you don't break down easily.
No, not really. I haven't. It's funny. I told someone in the cast, I was like, I have not cried this much since I was like 12 years old. Mm. Like once we got like the news or whatever, just thinking about notice. Like not being with everyone, like this whole family. I'm like, they really like took a place in my heart. And I was like, wow. And I like, everyone was like, yeah, you don't cry. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I've cried every night since. So
is that what you'll miss most? The cast?
Yeah.
The camaraderie, that experience versus the actually doing of the show?
I think doing the show too, because it's like, obviously them, but then getting to dance with them on stage and sharing that energy on the stage, knowing what the audience is getting from it, because everyone's story is so uniquely different and everyone is authentically being themselves and like representing something that like someone connects to. And so like knowing that that opportunity is not going to be there anymore is it's kind of all of it.
It's bittersweet because I think particularly with dancing, there it's unlikely that a show like this will come back anytime soon. It's such a rare piece of theater. Theater is changing so much. Mm. I'm so grateful that we got to be a part of it, but that audiences got to see it even in its brief run, because yeah. I think it's important.
I do too. I really do. And it just showcases dancers in such a great light, as like all of us are triple threats as well. And that's what I also think is so sad about the commercial, just the commercial world in general, commercial theater, commercial TV and film. I mean, I've been on all these sets, how they treat dancers are like, they treat us like we're background characters always. And like, we're like, we do so much and they just don't want to give anyone a chance really, unless you like make them in a way. And so I think it was, I do think everyone in the show got what they needed to get out of it by being on stage and like people coming and seeing, because there were a lot of people in the community who are on the director side, who are on the casting side, who came and got to see it. And they're like, oh, they can hold their own and they can be in the spotlight and they're just as good as these big stars that we hire. And so maybe we can start making a name for people again. I don't know.
It was a real showcase.
Yeah, it really was.
In addition to being what it was, you know, but it had that ancillary effect of really giving you all an opportunity to show what you can do. Because, you know, we all know from seeing the show, you're all triple threats.
Yeah.
You can all act, you can all sing, and you can all dance. Mm-hmm. And so often, as you just said, ensemble, I'm using air quotes here, you know, ensemble members don't get to do that.
Exactly. Right?
Have you been able to identify what you got out of the experience? Have you wrapped your head around that?
Not fully, yeah. I don't think yet. I know that like what I'm representing on stage, being a non-binary performer, I know I never got it when I was a kid. So I know that there's someone out there that is looking at me and being like, oh, I can do this and my story also matters, and not to hide and pretend to be something they're not just because the commercial world doesn't want to see that in a way. So I know that at least.
Let's not gloss over that. Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah.
That's a big, you
it's
just
a
said
revolution
it,
in it, a way.
Revolution is a great word for you it, because you just said you never saw that on stage.
Yeah.
You didn't see that in film or television necessarily growing up, right? So now you get to be that for people.
Yeah, and I feel like it also comes in a, I mean, I feel like I keep using this word authentic, but like it doesn't feel like a stereotype. A lot of the times when I see it in recent films, TV, or even Broadway, they always try to stereotype it in a way of like, this is what a person should be. This is what a non-binary person should be in a world. And they're trying to present it and spin a story on it as like, this is acceptable, to make it more palatable for audiences, I feel. And I don't know, I've always noticed that in a way. It's like the entertainment world wants to control the narrative on what a gay person is, on what this is. And I'm like, there's so, it's so vast from just like, oh my God, you guys. Right. Like, and that's what they always showcase it as, like this overly thing just to like prove a point.
We could go down a rabbit hole here, but there's the homophobia, right? Which is one thing. Then there's ignorance, which is all part and parcel to the same. There's fear, which is also, I think they're all wrapped up. But to what you just said, which I think is really the important thing, not every non-binary person is the same. Not every heterosexual person is the same. Not every homosexual person is the same. When you're up on that stage and you're being Colton, right? You're being who you are. What do you think the world is receiving? Like, what do you want people to receive? What do you want to represent as a non-binary performer person, but also just as Colton?
Yeah. Oh, that's a really great question. I don't know. I've talked a lot about it with, and maybe it falls under the same thing, but I've talked a lot about it with my voice coach and co-songwriter, Mario Spinetti, about basically just, he always asked me like, what's the gift you want to give to the world as you're performing? And it's always in the world of like, I just want everyone to feel welcome. I want everyone to feel accepted in the space, whether, no matter what they look like. And so that's what I think I want my performance is always to do. Even if people don't necessarily look at me and they're like, oh yeah, that's me. Like if it's someone who is heterosexual, I want them to feel welcome in the space too. And I always feel like, yeah, you're great as you, I'm great as me. Let's all be great together. And like, it's okay to be whatever you want. And so I think that's kind of what I just want people to feel welcome and safe and accepted no matter how they present to the world.
Is that how you look at Spring Chicken?
Spring Chicken is like a different character.
Let's talk about Spring Chicken.
Spring Chicken is when my Gemini comes out.
Okay. Well,
so
I'm a Gemini. I can relate. Uh-huh, you know, yeah. I get it.
I don't know about Spring Chicken. Spring Chicken is a little feistier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because I think what I meant by that was really as an audience member, when I see Spring Chicken, I can see how certain audience members would look at Spring Chicken and they see bondage, they see sexualization, they see a world they don't understand, or they see a world they do understand and they see, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But like when I watch you perform Spring Chicken, I think Spring Chicken is inviting us all to, right? Which is what you're saying is right. You had just said that like what you want people to feel is comfortable and you want people to feel. So that's what I get from Spring Chicken, but maybe that's just...
Well, I do think that. I think it's also because I feel some of that energy from the audience when they're like, whoa, okay, this is very sexual now all of a sudden. And so I think I feel some of that. So sometimes I'm like, oh, maybe I'm not giving that story. But like, I guess I am thinking that because I'm like, there's this Peter John Chersen is this person. He's Cyril. He's new to the world. And I'm like, come into my home and let's play and you're welcome here. And so like, I am thinking that in a way. I don't know. It's also when everyone's like, it's so sexual. And I'm like, I'm literally staying just because the outfit is like sexual. I'm literally doing a hip. Liza Minnelli literally did it. Like, I'm like, it's not, I don't think the choreography is overtly sexual. And so when people are like, oh, it's so sexual, not appropriate for kids and things, I'm like, I think just the outfit is, but like when you go to the beach and you see girls in thong bikinis and 100%. Like, I'm like, it's, I don't understand. Like you see it in the summer. So I don't know how you're saying this is now because I'm in a Hinge doing an isolated movement. It's so sexual.
I just realized for the first time, and I've seen the chair dance multiple times. I watch Cabaret once or twice a year at least. And I just realized, now this isn't necessarily your movement, but I just realized like a week ago that ultimately what they're doing on the chairs at one point are mountain climbers, the exercise. That's what it like.
Oh, and,
And it's so funny that, and it isn't, I'm oversimplifying some really great choreography and I don't mean to do that, but it's also like, it's a workout.
Yeah.
It's just hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I did was one of the Kit Kat girls in the Fosse Verdon television series, and I did that part. It is a workout, but it is a mountain climber, but it also is like, I don't know, like the slaps. Valerie Pettifor taught us it, and she basically was like, anytime you slap, you don't rest your hand on the ground. It's not like a slap, slap, slap. It's like a ooh, it's like it was hot, like the surface was hot, so you hit it and
like
spring
a tap
off.
Almost like
and so there's that energy to it, like it's like ooh, hot. And so like that must be like the sexual part of it, I guess. But yeah, it is a mountain climber.
Or it's just heat.
Yeah.
Right. How was it working with Valerie Pettifor? I'm a big fan of hers.
She is the most incredible human I've ever met. She, I mean.
What an endorsement.
Yeah. The way she teaches her knowledge on the Fosse work, it is, I literally was like, wow. And her, just her as an actress and like how her mind thinks. Like, I'm like, oh my God. So that's, I think, why she can also explain it so well, because she was like, no, you should be feeling it here. Like, it should be like you're doing this. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I'm like, I understand that. And it was really great. And like, she would watch it and like, she would get emotional and she'd be like, I know he's so proud of you guys right now. And then she's like, okay, let's fix this a little. But then like,
he's proud, but let's clean it up.
Yeah. But she literally every time.
Do it better.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's amazing.
But every time she was like, Mr. Fosse would have loved working with you. And like, she just, she got so emotional because she was like seeing the work again. Mm. And I think that's, it's really special when all these legends who have worked with him come and see it, and then they're seeing the work again and they're like, oh my God, he lives on.
Yeah.
And like,
it's powerful.
Yeah.
It's very, it's very special. Before we move on from Spring Chicken, I do have to share. No, I do just have to share, because you just made the point, you know, that some people might be a little, you know, clutching their pearls or whatever about, you know, the scenario. I brought my nieces to see the show. Okay. They are 10, 8, and 5 turning 6 this month. Mm-hmm. And the 8-year-old was obsessed with spring chicken. Right?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And of course, she's 8, right? Mm-hmm. So she's seeing what she's seeing unvarnished from any other sort of context or concern for what's sexual or what's not. She mm-hmm. just was drawn to you.
Yeah.
And your performance, mm-hmm. right? And in a way, that's almost purer than what some adult who's, you know, got their head polluted with all sorts of other ideas might have, or their reaction, you know? And I was so touched by that. I think my sister might have been a little more scandalized as a parent, but I was like, you know what? Good for you. Yeah. Like, I loved that that was, because I asked her, what was your favorite moment in the show? Mm-hmm. And she said, spring chicken. Did not even skip a beat. There you go. You've got an 8-year-old fan.
I love that. Ioana and Manny and Corinne have all told me to, like, Zahi and Lennox and Juno were like, could not stop talking about it. And it's so funny. I'm like, it's crazy. And I mean, all of them are amazing parents. We have so many parents in our cast. It's incredible. I know how Io is always like, this is your friend. Like, you're going to be nice, like all this stuff. And yeah, I think it's just once they start getting something, another idea in their head, or someone is like, this is how I feel about it. And then they start forming a different opinion about it. Whereas like first they're like, why is it wrong?
Right.
Like, it doesn't make sense. And I'm like, as a kid, nothing is wrong until you have someone putting their opinion on it and then they think it's fact. And then that's how it happens. And I'm like, no, that's just an opinion.
Yeah.
Just someone's opinion.
It has to be corrupted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. Yeah. You know, and I imagine, you know, you've talked candidly about this before, about you're laughing at the word candid.
I always am. I'm like, ooh, should I be saying this? And I just start saying it. I'm like, well, it's already done.
The answer is yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, but you've talked about how in this business and in this world, there can be a very, to use a word, binary approach to casting, right? And that's, casting is the bread and butter of this business. That's right. It's how you get a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there can be very sort of limited ideas of who can do what. And I get the sense from reading and hearing you talk about this experience that perhaps a highlight of Danson was that you got to be you authentically, to use that word, on stage. And you had this opportunity to play a role that wasn't a quote unquote male track or a quote unquote female track.
Yeah.
Right. It was just your track.
Exactly. You said candid and I'm about to be candid. Oopsies. Yes. However, I'm also the only track that if I call out or I'm out of the show, it is then split into binary. Is then I'm half covered by a male, half covered by a female. So yes, it's really great, but then also knowing that if I'm not on stage, there is no non-binary track happening. Right. So that was also, that was a trick bag, as Corey would say. But and I know that they were trying to find that. I don't know how they couldn't find that. I think there's so many incredible non-binary performers out there. And I think it also has to do with, like, I lift Corey on my shoulder at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Obviously, someone who is born female can make, I mean, maybe they could do that, but that's one of the harder lifts. But, like, it just doesn't feel like, maybe they're like, okay, yeah, that's wrong. But I'm like, that part could have been changed. Yes.
There are ways around it. Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that, you know, as this industry grows and embraces the reality of non-binary people, right, that these are all things that have to be taken into consideration, right? And, and, you know, that you sort of had this bittersweet feeling about the fact that you did get to play this track, but then if you weren't in the show, it was split.
Yeah.
That's an interesting insight that maybe someone who isn't non-binary, who hasn't taken the time to think about it, might not realize.
Yeah. Right? And I also think, because I don't want to, like, rip on them.
No, of course not.
Because I think their whole thing around it was building a track around me and my strengths and what I can do.
Right.
And then not realizing that, like, oh, we can't have, like, oh, like, not thinking it at they didn't think of it as a non-binary track. They thought of right. it as Colton's track.
Right.
Corinne and Wayne did. So mm-hmm. that I think, because of what I can do, then limits what, who can cover.
Right.
In a way. So
right.
it was both.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. I don't think I would want to change anything I got to do, because I mean, one of my favorite parts is getting to start the show with Corey.
Yeah.
I mean, I love
what a great entrance
and presenting yeah. her to the stage. I mean, it's Corey Michelle Petnod. She's a star. I get to carry her. I love it. So
yeah,
it's just, yeah, it's, I don't know. It was like a thing. I was like, I don't know how I feel about it. I kind of feel gross about it, but also I'm like, I don't think that was their intention.
Right.
It wasn't their intention. They were just,
it's not mean spirited or,
yeah, it's just how it happened.
Born of a good place. However, this is how change happens, mm-hmm. right? So unfortunately a mistake may have been made in how the fulfillment of your track happened.
Yeah.
But the reality is now the world knows to do better. Mm-hmm. Right. And so perhaps, hopefully,
yeah,
let's make this happen, right? That this is how we move forward.
Exactly.
In terms of when we're defining people's tracks, when we're mm-hmm. casting, when we're doing all of these things.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. you know, somebody's gotta make a mistake for a change mm-hmm. to happen. I'm not yeah. saying a mistake was made necessarily.
Yeah.
That sounded a little harsh, but
yeah.
this is how change happens.
Yeah.
It's slow is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
It's slow and it's complicated and it's not always easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's great that they make, because all Broadway shows do, they always design, when you're starting a show, design the track after the person who
right.
is originating it. But then some tracks are easier to replace people when they leave after a show. And some, if they don't do it correctly, then it's like, oh shit, how are we going to do this?
We cast a unicorn. How yeah, do right. we replace
exactly.
this person?
Yeah. So that you have to, I mean, obviously give that person their opportunity to shine and show everyone what they can do so they yeah. can have the best opportunity with the show and whatever happens beyond it, but also have to think like, okay, so if this person is doing a lift, how are we going to cast it if it's non-binary? So maybe we shouldn't, like, just, you have to think about all of it, I think. Which then, I mean, that's a lot of thought process to go into one thing, but we're building a Broadway show that's, like, everyone's building a Broadway show. Broadway shows go down in history. I mean,
yeah.
you're essentially making theater history every show you open. So everything should be that. It should be a big decision. You should be thinking that broad and like, how can this happen? This track needs to be this. Okay, we're creating it on this person, this, this, and this. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a consideration. It's certainly something that, you know, creatives have to think about.
Exactly.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, yeah. Speaking of building your track,
mm-hmm.
you know, not only are you the fabulous spring chicken at the end of, or towards the end of Act One, mm-hmm. but you also get to do the trumpet solo
yes.
in Sing, Sing, Sing,
yes.
which, you know, Jamie and I were at a workshop presentation you all did back in, what, December 2021, and we kept saying, who's gonna do the trumpet? Who's gonna do the trumpet? Because we didn't know, right? Until yeah. it happened. And then it happened.
Uh-huh.
And then afterwards we said, well, duh.
Yeah.
Like, of course it was Colton, because that was incredible. So when did you find out that you were going to do this solo?
So I didn't find out until we were like a week or two into starting the lab.
Yeah.
And we started working on Sing, Sing, Sing. They, when they told us we would all have like three features essentially, mm-hmm. and then being the ensemble for everything else. So like no one knew exactly what feature they were going to do yet. And we were all just like kind of taking it day by day, except for, because we obviously sat there and read through the whole script.
Right.
And so I knew I was going to be doing Spring Chicken, whatever that was. And then everyone knew those roles because it was all written in the script. Sing, Sing, Sing was not in the script because there's no words to it. And no one knew. It was a role I really wanted. And during the audition process, I had already found out that I booked the job. But again, we didn't know what role that was going to be. And then I found out they were doing a tall girl call for trumpet solo. And I called my agent and I was like, Sophia, can I please just go in? Can you get me in so I can show them I can do it? Like, I just want to show them I can do it because it's something I wanted to do. I watched Dailese Crowman do it growing up. And I was like, that is the most iconic solo I've ever seen. I need to be doing that. And so she said, I couldn't get in because she was like, no, they've already seen you. You already have the job. Like, they don't need to see you for this. They don't want to. And so I was like, okay, great. I didn't get it. So I walked in being like, okay, that's a feature I'm not going to do. And then when they told me, I was like, oh my God, wow. I was shocked, but yeah. Also really excited to be able to do it.
So what was it like learning it? Was it a panic moment? Like, no, now I have to do this.
What have I gotten myself into?
Or was it like, were you just, you know, thrilled that you'd get to, you know, do it and discover your version of it?
It was thrilling. I mean, yeah, they had all of us. So it was, Ida Saki, who is one of the, on internal coverage for it, Ashley Blair Fitzgerald, who was one of our understudies at the beginning. And then me, we were all in the room learning it from Christine. Obviously Ashley had done it in Fosse. This version is slightly different than the Fosse version because they added music to that one and switched directions on a couple things. But it essentially was, I mean, it's the same solo. It has the same meaning. We had, 45 minutes to learn it, and they were learning, doing something else in the other room. And then all of a sudden, everyone came in, and Wayne, Corinne, and they're like, okay, let's show it. And we were like, oh, and that's when I got stressed. I was like, I literally just learned this. I don't even know how to count this yet. Yeah. Like, what? It was crazy. There's a video of all three of us doing it all at once.
Cool. Oh, wow.
I have to find it because
somebody needs to post that.
Exactly.
Right? That's incredible.
Yeah.
A little BTS.
Exactly. Yeah. It was really cool.
What do you think makes your trumpet solo your trumpet solo?
The story that I'm telling is what everyone's telling. Like, you're in the back room, you're changing, your song comes on, you start looking at yourself in the mirror naked, and you're like, ooh, what do I look like if I do this? And then you're just kind of, it's an improvisation, no one's watching you. And that's kind of the basis of it.
Yeah.
And I think what makes mine different is that there is the feminine quality, but then there's also the like athleticism of it and the strength behind it. And so it's the mixture of all of that. And then finding the, Corinne really helped me find the ebb and flow of like the like explosive to the quiet parts of it. Because when I first started learning it, I was definitely hitting it really hard. And she was like, when you're hitting it all up here, it's not as exciting. It's kind of like you're screaming at someone and everyone is like, whoa, like they're going to be shocked, but it's like, they're not following a journey. You have to have a journey through it. And so she really helped me pick apart moments of silence and moments of like explosiveness. And so I think finding that within the solo and how it changes every night, I think that's what makes mine so uniquely different. And also, I mean, I've been doing it every night. And so like, I guess I have the opportunity to play with it a little more.
So on Broadway, you've done it every performance.
Yes. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I also don't have the hair.
Oh, true.
So
right. The hairography, right?
Yeah.
But you have the shirt.
I have the shirt.
And I will say, and I wanted to ask Reed and Harriet this, and I don't think I did. Maybe you can answer it. I'm sure you can. In San Diego, your shirt was flowy and a little unwieldy. And you have a different shirt now, right?
No.
Is it the same shirt?
It is the same shirt.
Is it weighted?
No.
It's not? Wow, it feels like a totally, like, it looks the same. But is it you? Is it how you're controlling the shirt?
In San Diego, I didn't really know how to, like, the first couple times I did it when we were doing tech or whatever, I did it like once or twice without it. And then they were like, okay, no, you have to wear it. And I was like, okay, cool. And I wore it. And I think I just like didn't process it. Like, I kind of knew what it looked like because people were telling me what it looked like. Yeah. And they were like, it looks like when I do like the walks getting off the platform at the end, they were like, it literally blows in the wind. Like Beyonce, like it's like you have a Beyonce fan on you.
Yes. And where's the fan? That's what I always want to know. Where's the fan?
I know.
There is no fan.
Nope. And I think it's also the new costume. I hated the costume in San Diego. It was just a stand-in because last minute, Wayne didn't like what I was wearing.
Yeah.
And so they were like, this is all we have time for. And so that was kind of just like, boop, we did it. I didn't love the costume there. And so that may have something to do with it as well. But
your costume now is fantastic. Oh my gosh. I love the beading on the boots too. I really can't. I mean, I'm looking at your feet because of your kicks, but I'm really looking at the beading at the rhinestones or whatever they are. They're really great.
I love the rhinestones. I literally went to Reed and Harriet. I said, so we should stone the shoes, shouldn't we? And they were like, Reed was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, they're going to get stoned. I said, great.
That's amazing. That was you, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I asked a lot of questions to Reed and Harriet about costumes. I was like, but what if... I always had the questions in the... Don't you think that would be great? You can... I mean, they could say no.
Well,
they were the
also,
designers.
It's you up on that stage.
Right. You're the one wearing it.
And you're the one wearing it. And, and everything you do has a part of you in it, right?
Yeah.
This is... We've talked about this with many people in the company. And you've referenced it as well. Mm-hmm. I do have a question about the shoes, though, because I have noticed this. There are, most of the time... In the show, you're in heels or some sort of a boot. I don't know if it's a Johnny boot or, but then there's a moment where you're in flats. Is that driven by dance? Is it character driven?
The duet?
Yes.
So that is Joan Endeavors.
And you're in flats.
Yes. And technically, this is where the binary thing comes in. That is the male-male duet. But Ida and Dailese are both barefoot as well. And I think it's just the... because what Joint Endeavors is about, it's kind of about the hookup culture. Right. Every duet is about hooking up with someone. So we're like having intimate relations towards each other. The shoe for me, the ballet shoe, was a request for me personally, just because it feels more contemporary ballet. And I've just felt more comfortable in that. I think they wanted me barefoot originally, but I did it barefoot in San Diego and it didn't work for me. I did it a couple times and then I did put a ballet shoe on again in San Diego, but a nude one, because the costume was slightly different. And yeah, the beads on the floor from Sing, 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 some of them fall and they're glass beads. And so when they get stepped on, they shatter. And I was getting glass stuck in my feet.
Oh,
so I was like, I'm not doing that.
Oh, I've had that happen. It's very painful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good. Okay, yeah. I was curious. Yeah.
Well, shoes are important. I mean, you know, not to belabor the point, but, you know, the shoe is the part of you that touches the floor.
Exactly.
Right? So the dancer, it's not a small thing, right? Getting the shoes right is, in fact, really important.
Yeah, and I love a ballet shoe. I mean, I went to Juilliard, you know, and I don't know, ballet is one of my favorite things and I like a ballet shoe.
Yeah.
So
why not?
You know,
as the song says, if it feels good, let it ride.
Exactly. You know? Amen. Amen.
So we're at the Joint Endeavors part of our conversation.
Sure.
I think is where we're at. Right, Rob?
Well, you know, it's one of my favorite moments of the entire show.
Amazing.
And I'm obsessed with the duet that you do with Jovan. And I think it's, you know, one of the more, from an audience perspective, those lifts are just so thrilling to watch. And they seem like, they might not in fact be, but they seem like some of the more technically difficult things that happen in the whole show.
Yeah.
I mean, you also have those kicks in the trumpet solo, which also feel like an impossibility because your body's going in six different directions at the same
time. And yet you do them.
Yeah.
Six times.
Is that what it is? It six?
It's six.
Three and three.
Three and three.
I'm counting tomorrow.
Check your math. 12 on two show days.
So what was that's true. Yeah. So what was it like developing that piece with Jovan and, you know, figuring out the technicality of those lifts?
I mean, Jovan is such a strong dancer and such an amazing partner. Yeah. And so I mean, we learned it from a video, obviously, and we looked at it a couple times, and then Corinne was like, so I think they come this way around, and so we basically, it was kind of a trial and error on how we get into the lifts, because if you watch All That Jazz, where these duets come from, it's like picture after picture after picture. You never really see the transition on how they get into it, and so... It was a lot of us piecing the pictures together. And like, I mean, with the lifts, Jovan is so easy to dance with. Yeah. And like, anyone who dances with Jovan says the same thing. I was talking to someone who was his partner, and she was just like, it's so weird. Like, you don't even second guess anything. Like, the trust you can feel from him and his energy is like, you feel safe and you're like, I'm just going to do it. And like, I know you're going to catch me. Like, we're going to be fine. And it's just, it's that, it's so something so special that he has as a partner that not everyone has.
I imagine that's rare.
Yeah, it's so rare. And it's so special when that connection kind of happens. And I don't think I've seen anyone like, or met anyone who has partnered with him who has not said the same exact thing, which is crazy because partnering is a skill and it's a hard skill to learn. And so
it's its own dance in of itself.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. I'm like, if I'm ever in an audition room and Jovan is there and there is partner work, I'm looking right at Jovan and like, we're doing this together. We're going to do this.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, the other moment that I have to highlight, which, it's quick. It's so fast, but it's I Gotcha.
Oh, I love I Gotcha.
Yeah.
I love Harley I Gotcha. Does too. She said the same thing.
It's
you
so
both
fun.
Love doing it.
Yeah, we do. We feel, I mean, as the pimps, we're like, we're Yanni's backup dancers. Yeah. Like, yeah. Yanni is Beyonce and we are behind her like, you got this.
Boy, Yanni crushes I Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, crush. I was shocked when she told us that she hadn't really watched Liza do it. Like she wanted to be able to have it, you know, not in her head. Mm-hmm. And she just, oh my God, she crushes it.
Yeah.
All three of you do.
I mean, but Yanni especially.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so funny too, because like she literally embodies, I mean, she does it her way, obviously,
right?
But it's like, she still embodies the Liza energy. And for not seeing Liza do it, I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I feel like a lot of people have not watched a lot of things because they didn't want
intentionally.
To. Yeah. Intentionally. Cause we didn't want to be influenced by a choice that someone else made. And I think that goes to show with how Wayne brought us all together and was basically like, cause Wayne didn't really even want to see us and us look at ourselves in the mirror and try to change and like self-correct ourselves, because he was like, Bob never worked with mirrors. Bob let everyone shine the way they needed to shine, obviously. And I think that was the most special thing about this process was that, but like how the energy was still the same.
Yeah.
Even though like, I mean, Trumpet, I try to channel Dailese in a way every single time. I look at her, she goes off actually. I don't know if she told you, but when she goes off, she kind of starts the amoeba of it already doing like a little movements from Trumpet. And I'm like, okay. And I see it while I'm walking on. And then
the baton has passed.
Yeah.
You know?
And then she does it whenever I'm sitting there and I'm looking here. I start with my eyes closed usually just to like get in it. And then she starts walking off and she's the first one off stage in that back diagonal. And she does the shimmer hands down and then she throws it to me every single night. And so I'm like, I feel that energy, right? She throws it to me as I start looking and I see it and then I start looking. And so it's like, she's sending her energy. She's sending Annie's energy. She's like, you're doing your trumpet now in a way. And so it's like, it's a really special moment.
What a lineage.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, oh my gosh, what an insight.
It's fun. I mean, I always say it. I'm like, it's two generations of trumpets in the building. She's like, it's not two generations. It's three generations because Annie's here with me always. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God, emotional.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I mean,
God.
Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really cool.
Well, I've noticed when you're doing trumpet solo that you look stage left several times during the solo. I don't know if you... Mm.
I don't
know that you do this, or maybe not.
Oh.
I don't know. There's a glance. You just did it. I just saw it. I wish this was a video podcast because you just did the exact same look that you give on stage. What? Talk to us a little bit about that.
I don't know.
You don't know.
Okay. I don't know why it's I
just,
do that.
It's just what happens.
Yeah.
It comes from within.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I do know because that side of the stage and that front corner.
Yeah.
Carly DiNardo is right there. And I feel her too at the same time. And so I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know though. I don't know for sure.
Look, it's just something that happens.
Yeah.
I read a review of the original Dance Sin where Anne Reinking was described as having a feline intensity, which I'm sitting with a cat.
Uh-huh.
And I'm wearing my Cats t-shirt today. And you are doing the, a dance that uh-huh. Anne Ryan King did. And I don't know, there's something about that phrase, feline intensity, that has always stuck with me because it's such a perfect way of describing both her as a performer, mm-hmm. but also now you as a performer.
Yeah. And I totally understand that because of how Cats kind of changed the way I dance.
Yeah.
Obviously. Because we were in cat school for the first 3 days. We did cat nothing school. Else. We literally crawled on the ground for 3 days. It was so crazy. especially because we were all crawling on the ground and like Leona Lewis was crawling on the ground with us. We were all like, I was like, oh my God, Leona Lewis is on the ground with us. Like,
we're in it.
It was like, we all were like, what is happening? But you know, you learn and then you like learn the little things and it's always like, it's this intention and it's like the hairs on the back of your neck stand up and like where that comes from and like where you start sensing things from more and realizing that you don't always have to look at it to sense something. Like you don't have to hear a noise and be like, oh my gosh, and look at it. You can feel it in the back of your ear. I think that is also something I use whenever I dance as well. And I think it helps it helps the energy project more outwardly, I guess, in a way. But like, it's definitely about like where you're holding back and stuff and when you can like let go. I mean, like cats pounce a lot and before they pounce, they always back up slowly and like they get still and then they jump and attack. And so it's like bringing that into human stories as well, because I mean, we're all inherently animals as well. We're all animalistic. We have that inner animal in all of us. And so like, if you can find that on stage as well, while being a human and then humans see it, it also reads differently and like, oh, I've had that feeling before.
Well, we have to ask, do you have a favorite moment in the show?
Oh my gosh. That's so hard.
Yeah.
That is so hard. There are so many moments that like, I love. Gosh, if we're talking about a moment I do, I mean, trumpet, obviously that's like a given. And I love, I mean, the features I have are really big highlights for me. I love Calypso. Calypso is one of my favorite numbers to do. I don't know why. And I think it's because it is so modern and it's kind of back to my training and Bob choreographed this. So that's another favorite moment. I love Big Noise. I never want to do it. I never want to do it. We had to do like, eight counts or something in the audition. And it was the hardest thing. And I'm like, we only did eight counts. It is like a 5 minute long number. I would die. I'm like, I never want to do it. I never want to do it. But I love watching Tony and Nando and Maddie do it because they're incredible. But I never want to do it. There's a lot of moments that I'm like, I love sitting backstage and hearing Corey sing Cherries. That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, her voice. Oof.
She, when we interviewed her, she was sort of questioning that moment, like, is it really landing? And I said, do you have ears?
Yep.
Can you hear?
Must know, like, I believe is what you said. Yeah. You must know.
Because it's just every time I see it, even, you know, there are audiences that are better than some, right?
Yeah.
Every once in a while you get an audience that isn't reacting. But that there are several moments you just cannot, even the worst audience goes crazy for.
Yeah.
And Corey's.
It's always
Cherries. This one, yeah, always, always, always. So, yeah. What will you miss most about the show?
The people, definitely all the people. That's definitely, I think, the main thing I'm gonna miss: being in the building with everyone, being on stage with everyone. I mean, I know we'll see each other. Hopefully, I mean, you never know with this business. It's the people the most.
Well, you are an incredible dancer. There's no question about that. You've also said publicly that, you know, you would consider hanging up your dancing shoes to focus on your music. So
yeah.
I'm curious, is that what's next for you? Have you given any thought to what that looks like?
Yeah, I'm actually writing 2 new songs right now. And yeah, I am definitely working towards that. I think I'm always going to use dance. Movement's always going to be a part of my storytelling, even if I'm a singer. I mean, pop singers dance all the time. But yeah, I'm definitely starting to focus elsewhere with it just because, you know, the body hurts.
But also growing artistically takes many shapes and forms.
Exactly.
Right? You will return to dancing. You may, I cannot say dancing. I always say dancing. But it does. Yeah. Art takes many shapes.
Exactly.
And as an artist, you can spread your wings and grow mm-hmm. and do all of those things. And it doesn't, you don't need to be defined as a dancer the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Or maybe you do.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, I don't know, I'm definitely interested in music, obviously, and writing it and performing it and doing that aspect of it. I'm also, I wouldn't say acting is my strong suit with my words and things, because I get nervous speaking sometimes as a dancer, you know, because we're always told that, you know, growing up, we were told that like our voice didn't really matter. Just do what we tell you. And so that's another thing. But
well, that's fucked up.
Yeah, it is fucked up. But now I'm getting more comfortable with doing Spring Chicken. And like, that's why it's one of my favorite moments, because I'm like, I learned how to feel comfortable with using my words on a stage and acting and then singing and like dancing all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like I encompass
such
everything
power
into
in all of
it.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, I can do this now. Kind of just, I guess, just marrying everything I do all in one. Now I'm like, no, I want to be doing things where I'm doing all of it.
You've gotten a taste of it.
Yeah.
With dancing.
Exactly.
And now you want more.
Yeah. And I definitely, I don't think dancing is done for me. I just think if I can get into a room by just singing or acting, or, you know, I record my music and then I make a music video and like do that, then like, boom, whatever is gonna fulfill me artistically, I think is where I'm headed.
Good.
Yeah.
As it should be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Just doing things that artistically fulfill me.
Good.
Whether or not it's making a lot of money or doing work for myself. Hopefully it's both.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna manifest that it's both.
Let's manifest. We'll manifest with you. Well, amazing. You've been so incredible with your time and your insights into the show and sharing your experience. So thank you so much for being so candid.
Yep, always.
And speaking with us. I'm wondering, as this dancing journey comes to a close this weekend, and you've spent 2 years with, you know, these extraordinary people that you've lived with, and, you know, from San Diego to workshops to Broadway, what are your sort of parting words that you would want to share?
My parting words. We left our footprints on the sand of time. We did that. And I'm proud of everything we did. And I would not change a single thing besides the fact that we're closing. That's the only thing I think I would change.
Yeah.
Everything else I don't think I would do anything differently.
You left it all on the stage.
Yep. We left it all on the stage. We left it all with each other, and I'm proud of every single one of us.
And as you said earlier in this discussion, at some point this weekend, this production of Dancin officially enters Broadway history.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And you'll always be a cast member of Dancin.
Mm-hmm.
You did that.
Yep. Always be a cast member. And if you need to come see us again, we'll be in the Lincoln Center Library.
There you go.
Yeah, that you will. Well, thank you so much. Oh,
thank you so much for having me.
It's been a real treat.
Yes.
A dancing man, a dancing man, a dancing man with footsteps on the sands.
Dancing Man, a Fabulous Invalid podcast, is a production of O&M Etc. and the Fabulous Invalid LLC, and a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to Civilian for hosting us, and to our audio engineer, Kyle Moore. If you liked this episode, we've got over 100 episodes of the Fabulous Invalid podcast that you can check out, including a two-parter on the life, work, and legacy of Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. You can find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com, and on social media, at Fabulous Invalid, and on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.